I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 14th of July. This hour, ProPublica has been detailing relationships between doctors and the pharmaceutical industry for the past 4 years. Their Doctors Dollars for Docs database contains approximately $4 billion in payments to doctors, other medical providers, and healthcare institutions that have been disclosed by 17 pharmaceutical companies and their subsidiaries since 2009. We talk about that database this hour and why some consumers may be a little bit concerned are certain drugs being prescribed by some doctors because of their affiliation and the perks they get from the pharmaceutical industry. Charles Ornstein is our guest. He is senior reporter for ProPublica covering healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry. And he's a senior reporter. He has covered healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry for some time. He was a lead reporter on a series of articles in the LA Times titled The Troubles at King Drew Hospital. It won a Pulitzer Prize for public service and many other awards. And here's how you reach our conversation this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Charles, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Kathleen, thanks for having me.
Tell me how long you've been doing this. You've published this Dollars for Docs database for a number of years now.
Absolutely. So first, let me give a link so folks who are listening who are interested in seeing what we're talking about can see it, which is www.propublica.org/docdollars.
Okay.
So Dollars for Docs started in 2010. At that time, a number of pharmaceutical companies had struck deals with the federal government that require that they disclose on their websites, on public websites, the payments they were making to doctors for such things as speaking and consulting, meals, travel, et cetera. And these companies were settling whistleblower lawsuits with the government that alleged improper marketing of their products or kickbacks to doctors. But this was not every company that was affected. It was just a handful of companies, some of the big ones, Eli Lilly, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, but not every company.
Mm-hmm.
But then something happened along the way that makes this a much bigger deal. And that is in 2010, as part of the Affordable Care Act, that very controversial law that does a whole lot of things that have gotten way more attention, there was a provision tucked in called the Physician Payment Sunshine Act. And what that provision does is makes every drug company, every medical device company, disclose this same information. So beginning at the end of last year, the government put out information from a five-month period, the last 5 months of 2013, for every company on their payments to doctors. There were some problems with that rollout, but this year, at the end of June, they published data for both the end of 2013 but all of 2014 for every company. We're talking about $3.5 billion in these general payments to 600,000 doctors.
Ooh.
And now you can look up every company for every doctor, and it's no longer just an incomplete picture of what your doctor received, but it should be a fully complete picture for every doctor in America.
So we can, as we did yesterday, go to that website, find our doctor, and see if he or she has been receiving payments.
Absolutely. You can go to Dollars for Docs, type in the name of your doctor, and see what payments they received. And each payment is a separate row. So it's not uncommon that you can find that some doctors have received dozens or, in some cases, hundreds of payments from the pharmaceutical industry over the 17-month period. One doctor received 1,700 payments.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that's a lot of interactions on a whole lot of days.
For what? 1,700 payments for what?
So that includes everything from meals. So every meal is listed as a separate line. So somebody who has a lot of meals with pharmaceutical companies is going to have a whole lot of lines over that 17-month period. Every promotional talk, every consulting payment. So doctors who have a lot of interactions with industry are going to have a lot of lines. Now, it's important to take a step back, right? These payments are not illegal. The only payments from a company to an individual that are illegal are companies that are kickbacks for using their product. So you cannot give a kickback to a doctor saying, I will give you $5,000 if you prescribe 500 prescriptions of my drug. That's illegal. People can go to prison for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get meals and you can get, you know, payments to do legitimate work for the companies. And that's what they would say this is.
Right. Well, you also have to wonder, and the meals extend. I know I've been to a doctor's office at times in years past where somebody from a pharmaceutical company has come in and said to the receptionists who are working there, what do you want for lunch? I'll go down to the Chinese restaurant and get you all some food.
That's right, yeah. So the meals not only include the doctor, but oftentimes include their staff as well. And some doctor's offices get meals, you know, a whole bunch of days a week. So that can take up a whole lot of this, and you can tell the difference, right? So there's some doctors that have a lot of payments, but their overall dollar amount is pretty low. And there's other doctors that have, you know, few payments, but their dollar amount is pretty high. So that helps you understand the nature of the payments. And, in fact, with each payment, it says what it was for.
Mm-hmm. Did you say there were 600,000 doctors who were receiving payments?
681,000, actually, have received a payment over the course of the 17-month period. Now, you have to remember, most of them receive one or two meals, and that's the extent of it. They're all in the database, but they received, you know, not a whole lot of things. And it's a much smaller percentage that had, you know, pretty active levels of interaction with the pharmaceutical industry.
What about these elaborate trips that we've heard about, Charles, to Hawaii or to the Caribbean, spend some time, maybe give a little speech, all expenses paid?
Sure. Well, particularly in the winter, don't you want to be on one of those?
So,
yes. those were sort of part of the lore of the pharmaceutical industry and date back, you know, many years. But those are supposed to be sort of things of the past. The pharmaceutical industry adopted a voluntary code of conduct that discouraged companies from providing junkets like this to doctors who, in order to sort of teach them about a drug. Now, much more commonly, you'll find that these involve meals. And the people who are getting travel money are people who are actually going to either consult for a drug company or speak on behalf of a drug. You still sometimes hear stories of junkets, but they're much fewer and far between and much more sort of a legacy of the lore.
Mm-hmm. Some of these doctors, you write in your work, work for not just one company, but they'll work for half a dozen or more companies in a given year.
That's right. Some of them work for dozens of companies. So, you know, to their point that they make is that they work with a number of different companies, and so that shows that they don't have a bias toward any one company in particular. Sort of the response that some ethicists give to contentions like that is that the concern is that by working with so many companies that it sort of instills an attitude among some of those physicians that, first of all, that newer is better. So they're more likely to try newer products that may cost a lot of money, but which may offer sort of marginal benefit over existing products. And second, that they may be less likely to try non-drug alternatives. And so that is a function of having all these interactions. It may not be that they are sort of attached to one company's drug necessarily, but it's more of sort of a prescribing attitude that these relationships with companies establish.
And Charles, tell me more about these speaking fees. They go from, what, $2,000 to $3,000? What are the doctors asked to speak about?
Well, generally, that's the case. And typically what happens is there's a dinner talk, and a doctor comes in and talks to other doctors in the community about a particular product. So what products are they doing these dinner talks on? They're products that, you know, are either really competitive. So right now there's a big arms race among makers of anticoagulant drugs, so blood thinners that are competitors for the blood thinner Coumadin. And these newer blood thinners are trying to gain market share. There's three new ones, relatively new ones on the market. And so there's a lot of money being pumped into speaking engagements on their behalf. Diabetes drugs, weight loss drugs. And the doctors that speak and do these promotional talks, they are required to use slides that the company provides for them. And the company does this so that they can comply with rules by the Food and Drug Administration, which prevents doctors from promoting drugs for uses that are not approved by the FDA.
And the doctors have tried all of these drugs on patients, or they're aware of extensive testing that has been done, that one drug is better than another?
That's a great question. I've talked to some doctors who are speakers on drugs that they say they never use.
They never use the drugs?
Correct. And they say that they are speakers on them because they're good speakers and that they enjoy educating and that the companies, you know, feel that they do a good job educating doctors.
But you're speaking about a drug. If you've never used it, how can you know what you're talking about?
They say that they've done the research to read the medical journal studies and read what the companies have provided them so that they are in a position to answer questions about it.
Mm.
But I think most doctors that are, you know, doing these talks probably have some level of experience, and in some cases a lot of experience with the drugs. Some of them are very well-known doctors who've done research and are sort of preeminent in their fields, and others are not so preeminent. They're doctors who we've found in the past, some doctors who are giving talks don't even have specialization and certification in the areas in which they're giving the talks.
You talk about some patients saying that a payment caused them to question a doctor's prescription for a certain drug. Others will say that it gives them confidence that their physician is an expert. Well, where is the truth in all of that?
So I think that what we've heard the most is that when a patient goes to look at their doctor and sees that their doctor is listed as receiving a payment, many patients this doesn't change their relationship with their doctor. And they trust their doctor, and they've had a good relationship with their doctor. And no one is saying that this data should cause patients to question their doctors in any sort of an antagonistic way or skeptical way, or that it should sort of breed mistrust with doctors. I think for patients who have questions about what their doctors are doing or doubts about the medications that are prescribed for them, some of them, when they look up their doctors in this and see that their doctor has received a payment from the company that makes the drug they're taking or the device that the doctor wants to implant, that raises questions, even more questions for them. And some of those patients are the ones that we hear from saying that they're switching doctors. So I think the data means different things to different people, and they act on it in different ways. But that's one of the beauties of this, is that having the information out there allows patients to make the decisions that are sort of meaningful to them.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't a case be made that there should be no payment whatsoever for this, for speaking of fees or for free lunches or whatever it happens to be, that it needs to be done completely on what research, medical research, shows is the best drug?
Well, so you're not the first person to raise that as a question. And look, I don't think that there's a whole lot of money that's being spent in this country on medical education right now. The government is not fully funding it, and universities aren't fully funding it, and so this is a void that the drug companies are filling. And many have said if they don't provide education about the drugs, that doctors wouldn't be learning about new drugs and new advances, and patients would suffer as a result. They also say that, you know, the pharmaceutical industry relies on collaborating with doctors to come up with new medications, both in the area of consulting, which is to decide what to study, into the area of research, which is actually conducting the trials, and then the promotional speaking, which is disseminating information about new drugs. And the way that the industry sort of frames this is that there's nothing nefarious about this, that this is all part of the continuum of ensuring that patients are receiving the best treatments that are available for them. But, of course, the concern is that in the process you are you don't see generic drug manufacturers out there giving information about their drugs. So you're only seeing the drugs that are new and expensive being promoted aggressively. And that is putting information in doctors' hands about products that may actually not be needed for their patients, and that you see a lot of waste and unnecessary prescriptions resulting from it.
Mm-hmm. And what about the drug companies themselves? You write that there are some that are at the top. You mentioned some of them earlier, but there are smaller companies also spending quite a bit of money on this.
Absolutely right. So you find that there's some of the predictable companies that are making big blockbuster drugs that are spending a lot of money, and then there's companies that are making drugs that you probably have never heard of that are spending a lot of money. So among the drugs that we've seen spent a lot of money on are, one, the weight loss drug called Belvic, and that's one that the company is spending quite a bit of money on now trying to promote. Another is a drug for cancer pain called Subsys, and we see that company is spending a whole lot of money on it. That's a very niche drug, but yet they're spending a lot of money on promotion. And the third is a drug that's been around for decades called XR, and this is a drug used to treat a variety of different conditions, but experts I talked to last year raised questions about whether it offered really any benefit for many of them. And the company is spending a lot of money on that as well.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Charles. Charles Ornstein is our guest, senior reporter for ProPublica. He covers healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry. And we're talking about, I think this is probably a little known part of the Affordable Care Act. It's the Physician Payment Sunshine Act. And it requires that all pharmaceutical and medical device companies publicly report payments over $10 to doctors beginning in 2013. ProPublica has put together this very elaborate Dollars for Docs database that contains $4 billion in payments to doctors, healthcare institutions that have been disclosed by 17 pharmaceutical companies and their subsidiaries since 2009. So you can look up your doctor on this and find out what kinds of payments have been given in terms of meals or speaking fees, research fees, et cetera, to the doctor. What do you think of this? Do you think that this is, you know, well, the service is probably valuable for everybody, but for a long time, people have wondered about this close relationship. Some have wondered how ethical it is between the pharmaceutical industry and the medical field. Some patients, as I said, say that, you know, if you're going to be getting paid for a speaking fee or for a lunch or whatever, you may question the doctor's prescription for that drug. Or you may, on the other hand, think that it makes your physician pretty expert on a drug. What do you think? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Maybe you've used this service. Would you want to look up your doctor and see what the relationship is with the pharmaceutical industry? Why would you do that? What difference would it make to you? This is the idea Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, our lines are filled. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we start with Kelly in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Hi. I used to work for a catering company, and we have the drug representatives order these wonderful lunches, and we knew that they were going to talk to the doctors. And I think that I find that some of them had good intentions and really believed in what they were doing, and some of them you could tell that it was more about the money and about making a quick buck. So I think within the system there is those people that really believe in educating the doctors on the medication, and then you have those people that are taking advantage of the opportunity to make the money quickly. And so, but there's no way to weed those people out. You just got to take a stand for your own health care and make sure that your doctor, you're asking your doctor the appropriate questions. And if you question that they're giving you a drug because they might have been influenced, go ahead and bring that up to them and let them know that that's how you feel.
Thanks very much. Charles.
I think this is great advice, right? So that's the beauty of transparency now, is that you can go to a site like Dollars for Docs, and you can type in your doctor's name, and you can see if they're receiving a payment that's connected to a drug you're taking. And then we give you some questions that you can ask your doctor. You know, are there less expensive drugs that I can take? Are there non-medication alternatives that I could try? What exactly is the nature of your relationship with the company that makes the drug? These do not have to be confrontational questions, but as patients, we need to be taking a more active role in our healthcare and asking questions. And if we're empowering people with this information, we sure hope that they use it.
Does Big Pharma spend a whole lot of money on free food for docs?
So from a dollar perspective, it's not all that much. But from the percentage of interactions, it's a lot. So sort of overall, it comes nowhere near what they spend for other things like royalty payments, which are payments that are made to doctors who invent the drugs or devices that they use.
Sure.
The company spent $800 million on royalty payments, $630 million on promotional speaking, and only $224 million on food and beverages. But in terms of the number of payments, food and beverages is, you know, 80-90% of the total of all the payments.
It still seems like a lot of money to me, $224 million.
That's right, and that's just in 2014.
Woo! Well, it's hard to think of any other places of business, maybe there are others, and you can inform me, that do that kind of thing, who give out that kind of food and beverages in order to get a favorable view. There's no other way to look at it of the drug that they're trying to sell. Why?
Well, you sort of know this, because when you go to restaurant websites, they'll say, you know, farmer rep special.
Really?
We've encountered a ton of websites that were there. Sort of aiming for the pharmaceutical industry. And then in the state of Massachusetts, they had at one time implemented a gift ban on doctors, and that included food. And among the biggest opponents of that ban were the restaurant industry. So, indeed, there is a strong relationship between the hospitality industry and the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm. Free food does it every time, right? And Massachusetts has been much more open about this than other places for quite some time, right?
Well, Massachusetts has many of the universities in the state have taken a position that drug reps aren't welcome to walk the floors of their hospitals, that their staff aren't permitted to give paid promotional talks on behalf of companies. This includes Harvard Medical School and the Partners Hospital System. They have, in some ways, set the tone. And then the gift ban, which I believe was later overturned, that certainly had an effect in terms of what companies could spend in the state.
Mm. Thank you very much for your call, Kelly. Let's go to Maddie in Waupaca. Hi, Maddie.
Hello. I guess now we know why the Republicans have fought so hard against Obamacare. This report follows right on the heels of a new book called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Health Care by Peter Gercha. Everyone should read that book.
What did you learn from it, Maddie?
There are medications that the pharmaceutical companies know is harmful to people, but they're still pushing it, and they have pharmaceutical companies have had to pay billion-dollar fines, but there's so much money coming in, they just ignore it.
You think there are a lot of deadly medicines out there, Charlie?
Well, certainly there are medications out there that have been found, once they're on the market, to cause side effects and be linked to harm, and they're then, you know, required to put what's called a black box warning on their labels, which tell folks about these serious side effects that can be caused. You know, we certainly hope that the Food and Drug Administration is not allowing products on the market that are, you know, deadly in that regard, but it does happen, and there have been products that have been withdrawn from the market, and that's one of the reasons why some experts caution folks about using new medications. And they say, unless you have a condition that is, you know, serious and life-threatening, like cancer, that it may be better to wait a little bit of time for a new medication to be on the market and to give folks the time to observe side effects in a much bigger population than is used for these clinical trials before you decide you're going to take that drug.
Maddie, thanks for your call. We'll check out the book and maybe do a show on that down the road. Dave in Menominee, hello.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to bring up these horrible commercials that we get for pharmaceuticals on television in our country. I don't think other countries allow such a thing. And how these pharmaceutical companies are really herding people in and telling them to ask their doctor for these drugs instead of simply going in and letting the doctor evaluate and choose what he thinks would be best. And I remember hearing a lot about how doctors didn't want to turn the people away because they didn't want to lose them as patients, so they would simply prescribe them what they're asking for. And I didn't know if your guest had studied any of that, how they're tied together that way, or if, you know, how often do these doctors actually go along with this? Because they must know that when a patient comes in asking for a drug that, you know, they probably saw a commercial for it.
Right. So, you know, the first time we really saw this take effect, and this wasn't even drug marketing per se, but was in the 1990s when there was a fad across the country called Fen-Phen. Some people may remember
yes.
that this was a weight loss drug combination. And doctors said that if they didn't prescribe it, that the doctor down the street would. And so that led a whole bunch of doctors to prescribe it. And then one of the drugs was removed from the market after being linked to a number of serious side effects. And so, but yes, I mean, we are sort of unique in allowing direct-to-consumer advertising, which is these ads you see on TV. And people do go in and ask their doctors. That's what the ad says. Go in and ask your doctor. And studies have shown that sometimes doctors are sort of likely to prescribe the drugs that people ask about. I think on the whole, the pharmaceutical industry says that this is about educating patients about new treatment options and that not all doctors are caught up on new treatment options and that in the end, it takes a doctor to prescribe a medicine. A pharmaceutical company cannot prescribe you a drug. A doctor can. And that we rely on doctors and their best judgments to make those decisions. So that's the point they make.
Mm. Those ads, though, I sometimes wonder how effective they can be, because sometimes it seems like at least half the ad is this real rapid-fire description of everything that can go wrong if you take the drug.
It is rapid fire, but sometimes it's you know, at least in the past, it's been played to music or, you know, it's really hard to keep up and remember all those things. Whereas the, you know, the people walking through the field of poppies or walking through the park or smiling with their children, taking a bike ride, those are the things you remember. The list of side effects, not so much.
Right. Somebody told me a long time ago, Charles, and maybe this has changed somewhat. There's been some investigation of parts of the industry, that the pharmaceutical industry in this country has not really been investigated very thoroughly since the 1950s. Is that right?
So I don't know what that means. I mean, individual companies have been investigated quite a bit, and I think if you talk to Pharma, which is the industry trade group, they'll say that they've been investigated unlike any other industry that there is on claims of marketing and promotion. And there are many investigations going on at any given time of drug companies. So I don't think it's fair to say that there haven't been investigations. Has there been an industry-wide investigation? I'm not sure what that means. I mean, actually, these are decisions made by individual companies. And so if you feel that a company is making a bad decision, you would investigate the company, but I'm not sure what an industry investigation would look like.
I think probably in terms of prices for drugs.
Well, certainly Senator Bernie Sanders, who is running for president, currently has an investigation going on looking at the costs of generic medications across this country and why generics are increasing as quickly as they are. Others have certainly raised issues about the cost of medications, particularly a new hepatitis C drug called Sovaldi and another one called Harvoni that cost more than $1,000 a pill. So that's gotten a ton of attention recently. So I do think that there's a lot of interest in drug prices, but it's not an industry investigation per se.
Dave, thanks very much for your call. And for those of you who've been trying to get through and haven't been able to, now you can. Charles Ornstein is our guest. He's a senior reporter for ProPublica, covers healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry. And we're looking at this database that they have published where you can get an idea, a very clear idea. If you look up your doctor, you can find out the contact that the doctor has had with the pharmaceutical industry in terms of payments for speaking fees or for food. There's a lot of this that is going on the part of the major pharmaceutical companies and smaller companies as well. Their Dollars for Docs database contains $4 billion in payments to doctors, other medical providers, disclosed by 17 pharmaceutical companies. This has been a requirement now to report on this as part of the Affordable Care Act, that they must publicly report payments over $10 to doctors beginning in 2013, and ProPublica has been publishing such a list since 2009. Does it make a difference for you to know if pharmaceutical industry has been giving your doctor some money? Would you be likely to look this up? Would you be likely to say something to the doctor? I'm just wanting to know why you accepted this, and has it determined whether or not you're going to prescribe a certain kind of drug? Does it raise red flags for you or not? 800-486-8655 is our number, and Charlie in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was going to say that it extends not only to the prescription drugs, but also to the non-prescription drugs. I'm a physician. I'm often asked things like, what baby formula is best? When in fact, we don't take any money from anybody, and it's often telling parents to go do their own research, or this is what I might like. I don't want to unduly influence a mother based on either their preference or my preference, and really let the mom choose for herself what formula she uses.
So you don't have visits by pharmaceutical representatives, Charlie?
Not anymore.
Really?
We totally don't talk to anybody. We have taken ourselves out of that so that we are not influenced.
Huh. Why did you do that, and when did you do that?
We did this about 5 to 10 years ago, and we did it really so that there would be no conflict of interest.
Are you rare?
I don't think so. I think it's becoming a much more standard practice, especially among the younger physicians, to say we're not going to put ourselves into any compromising position.
Hmm, that's interesting. Charles, do you have a question for Charlie or comment?
Well, I was just going to say that it extends beyond towards things like formula even.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about formula, I'm glad you raised it, is that, you know, there has been some controversy in the pediatrics arena of formula companies giving gifts of bags and other things to hospitals to give to women to encourage them to use a particular brand of formula. And there's been pressure on hospitals not to accept those or the money to distribute those in order to encourage women to breastfeed. And so even that is something that has been somewhat controversial. But, yeah, I think that there are a lot of doctors that have made the decision for themselves that they're not going to accept meals from the industry. They're not going to allow sales reps in their office. But what the data shows is that there are still hundreds of thousands of doctors across the country who have not yet made that decision and may never make that decision, that see value in the interactions between themselves and the pharmaceutical industry.
Yes. Charlie, thank you so much for your interesting call. Tom is next. Hi.
Hello. My concern, I guess, related to this would be, you know, the doctor's portfolio. You know, where are they investing? You know, for politicians, there's pressure periodically for blind trusts and that kind of thing. Whereas if you have a cancer doctor, he may, you know, be very interested in a certain manufacturer and steer business that way.
Charles.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, if the doctor buys shares in pharmaceuticals, they may be more likely to use or devices or others.
Right. So the government requires companies to disclose ownership stakes that they give to doctors. That is not in our version. It's not in Dollars for Docs, but it is on the federal website called Open Payments. So they do have sections on research payments, ownership payments, and these general payments. We've chosen to focus on the general payments because it is an important component, and it's the component in which there's the most frequent levels of interaction.
Hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. John in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. I have a quick question. I'm kind of curious about the generics. Who makes those, and those companies, do they promote their products somehow? I've never known that.
Well, so generics are made by a host of different companies, and typically when you go in to fill a prescription for a generic, if you go into a chain drugstore or a local mom and pop, you don't really know which company is filling it, nor do you have a choice, right? So if your doctor writes simvastatin, which is a cholesterol-lowering drug, on your prescription pad, your pharmacy could be getting that simvastatin from one company one month and another company the next month. So it's not really in the generic company's interest necessarily to promote their brand of a generic or their manufacturer to a doctor, because a doctor really can't say, I only want Teva's generic of simvastatin.
You really know your drugs, Charles.
I play a doctor on TV. No, I'm just kidding.
You've done a lot of reporting in the area, I can imagine. Thank you, John, very much for your call. We'll take more calls in a moment. And here's how you reach us, the many ways you can reach us, not just by phone, but if you choose by phone, it's 800-486-8655. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we love to read your comments. And email is talk@WPR.org, Twitter at @KDunnShow. Charles Ornstein is our guest, senior reporter for ProPublica. He covers healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry. And we're looking at the work that they've done for some time now, Dollars for Docs database that contains $4 billion in payments to doctors from 17 pharmaceutical companies. And you can look up your doctor on this database to see if the doctor has been receiving money from, in terms of speaking fees or fancy meals or not so fancy meals. All of that information is now required to be publicly disclosed as part of the Affordable Care Act. Do you find this payment problematic, or does it make your doctor seem more knowledgeable about drugs? We welcome your phone calls. Maybe you've used the database. Would you use a database? Does it make a difference to you if there is some kind of payment received? Well, let's take more phone calls in a moment. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue phone calls now, and our number here and now is 800-486-8655. We go to Jocelyn in Sheboygan. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I think any way you look at it is corrupt for a doctor to take money. To me, it's the same thing as the politicians taking money to favor whoever is giving them the money. And what I find worrisome also is where the drugs are made, where they're coming from, what countries. You can't find that out. You know, I've had pills that look different, and they, you know, they come from another company. So that's really worrisome to me.
Charles.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we do need to do a better job of letting folks know where the drugs are coming from. Companies can make drugs in a variety of different places as long as they meet U.S. manufacturing standards, but there have been articles written over the years to suggest that sometimes drugs made in other countries, particularly India most recently, have had troubles on the manufacturing side that have contaminated them or made them less trustworthy. So that is a legitimate issue, and one that the government has increased manufacturing inspections in India and China to account for. You're not going to find sort of those issues in this database, though.
Mm. And to reiterate what Jocelyn said, Brooks on Facebook says, pharmaceutical companies paying doctors is not any different than lobbyists paying or bribing our members of Congress, and it should not be part of the healthcare system.
Well, so, I mean, just as you can see on websites like Open Secrets, how much money companies spend to give donations to politicians or to spend lobbying members of Congress, in this case, you can look this up as well. And I think the belief is that transparency is a necessary step. Maybe it's not sufficient, but it is necessary in order to understand the nature of these relationships and then make decisions on whether they're appropriate. So I think we're in a very important learning stage now where a whole lot of information has come out, and it's incumbent upon us as journalists. It's also incumbent upon consumers and patients and researchers and others to use this information to see if it's useful and to see if anything decisions need to be made based on it.
Mm-hmm. Charles, do you know what the process was that made this pharmaceutical medical device company publicly reporting their payments part of the Affordable Care Act? How did that happen?
So Senator Charles Grassley and Senator Herb Kohl, Senator Herb Kohl of Wisconsin, were the champions of this. Hmm. That they saw numerous instances in which there were situations in which doctors were not disclosing that they received money from the pharmaceutical industry when, in fact, that they had, whether it was in medical journal studies or in presentations. And they were deeply concerned about this. And they made this sort of a mission, introducing it in a number of different congressional sessions before it became part of the Affordable Care Act. And one point I just wanted to make was that our site now includes all companies, so not just 17 companies, but every company that's made the disclosure. So we're talking about hundreds of companies that are now part of our site. And so you can still access the historical data on Dollars for Docs, so the payments from 2009 to 2013. That's in our archives, but you can access for every company the payments subsequent to that.
Let's go next to Jeremy in Bayfield. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. Your guest had said that people would not know which generic company was making their generic drug. Mm-hmm. And I found on my prescriptions that it says Teva right on the prescription bottle, so I know that it's from Teva. And I think that's helpful because if next month I get it and it doesn't say Teva, it has another company, and I have a reaction to it, I know that it's because it's a different generic and maybe that's the cause. So I just thought I'd make that correction so people could know that.
Right, so Jeremy, I think that you can often see on your drug bottle who makes it. What I think my point was is that you often don't have a say in the matter. So when you go to the pharmacy, you can't necessarily say it's your CVS or your Walgreens. I'd like this drug manufactured by Teva and not by Mylan Pharmaceuticals because the pharmacies choose who the generic manufacturers are for their products, and that can change from month to month as their deals with wholesalers change and others change. So it's that you just don't really have a say in which generic manufacturer you take if you go to the same drugstore. I mean, you can switch drugstores, but that could still change from month to month.
Right, yeah. Yep, that's happened to me as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks.
A caller wants to know about what you know about cancer doctors getting a kickback on cancer drugs. I saw this on the news as well. A Michigan doctor was recently caught diagnosing cancer when the patients never had cancer.
Right. So this is a slightly different thing. And this is, in the field of cancer, many oncologists administer cancer medications in their office, chemotherapy, et cetera. And this is put through a different part of Medicare. What typically drugs are put through the Medicare Part D program, which is the prescription drug program. But when they're administered in a doctor's office, they're put through the Part B program. And what happens is doctors receive an administration percentage, and then they also are reimbursed for the cost of the drugs. And so there has been controversy over the years about whether doctors receive too much or are given an incentive to overprescribe in order to increase and inflate their billings. And Medicare has changed that over the course of time. But certainly this doctor in Michigan is a really scary story of a doctor who, you know, diagnosed people with cancer who didn't have cancer in order to give them chemotherapy. And some of those people suffered very serious side effects or even passed away as a result
Goodness
of unnecessary
gracious.
Treatment. He was sentenced to 45 years in prison, but it's just a heartbreaking.
Not long enough. Put that person in for life, if you ask me. That's horrible. We have some lines open if you want to join us. 800-486-8655. Charles Ornstein is our guest, and we have lines open for you and other means of communication as well. You write that many companies have cut back on their spending on promotional speakers. Have companies cut back on all of this as a result of the disclosures needed?
No, not at all. It's too
really?
Early to say, first of all, but also I think what we're seeing is that it's more a function of the life cycle of particular drugs, meaning as drugs come on and off patent, as they are faced more competition from other drugs in the same category, you see companies adapt their spending decisions in this regard. So I think for some companies, sunshine and transparency have caused them to cut back on their spending, but for others, you've seen increases when they have new drugs that they want to promote and decreases when a drug loses its patent protection.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how many people have find all this information useful, are going to your website, to the database, and using the information to talk to their doctors?
Since 2010, we've had more than 10 million pages.
Oh, my goodness, really?
So, yeah, so this is a really popular feature. We have a lot of people who are very curious, and we find that this is something that people can understand, and we try to give them the tools to ask questions based on this and how do you integrate this into your medical decision-making process.
And give us the website again, please, Charles.
Sure, it's ProPublica.org.
/doc dollars. Great. Thank you. Erica, hi, in Oconomowoc.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question for you. Can you tell me what the impact of the Trans-Pacific Partnership might have on pharmaceutical companies and general oversight if indeed more drugs are produced in the Pacific Rim? That's my question.
So
That's a great question, and it's one that I know a number of medical groups, including Doctors Without Borders, is really concerned about. Obviously, the TPP, there is not final text of the TPP agreement, nor is there even a final agreement, so it's hard to know exactly what it will do. But the concern is that it will make medications unaffordable in countries that don't have the resources to buy them and make it out of reach for their citizens while putting sort of this cost on U.S. citizens, you know, where the pharmaceutical companies are based. So we don't know what it's going to say, but that certainly is a concern that the TPP is going to have adverse effects in terms of access to pharmaceutical drugs outside of the U.S.
Okay, can I just follow up? If 40% or so of our drugs are produced in India, isn't that going to impact the quality control issue for U.S. consumers?
Are you saying it's relating to the TPP or just more?
Yes, yes. I mean, if more of our stuff, our drugs are outsourced in terms of production, we have less oversight, basically, the FDA, et cetera. It makes it more difficult to know.
Well, it certainly is a very real concern now that manufacturing plants in India, in China, have been implicated recently in sort of failures in good manufacturing practices. The FDA has stepped up their oversight, and to the extent that even more drugs are made overseas, it is going to put pressure on the FDA to keep up.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Erica. Brian in Clear Lake. Hi.
Hello. I'm just making a small comment about experience I had. I have high blood pressure, and I was visiting two doctors for the treatment of the condition.
I'm sorry, Brian, can you call us back? I'm sorry, I was trying to release a line and something happened here. So please, we want to hear your comments. Just call back, please. Don in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I don't think you've touched on this, but it has concerns a drug company per se. I'm a retired physician. I've been out of the practice. I'm 92 years plus old now, and I've been out of practice for 25 years almost. Anyway, back when I was young in medicine, the only treatment for gout was colchicine. And then the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs came along, and some of those had some promise and were used. In the meantime, colchicine had long since become a generic drug. It was made by multiple companies. But anyway, over the course of the time, the rights to make colchicine were apparently purchased by one new or old drug company, and it was being marketed with a slightly different name as a new drug, and they were charging an arm and a leg for it. Maybe you know something about the subject, or maybe not.
Right, so colchicine is an older medication, as you know, that's been made for a long time. The FDA took it upon itself, and probably with good reason, to say that older medications that were approved before more modern FDA rules by a certain date had to be sort of tested and resubmitted and getting approval in an FDA modernization sort of context to be marketed and to assure that they would meet current FDA rules. And so a company purchased the rights to the drugs and is branding, I think the drug is Colchris now, if I'm not mistaken, and it costs a whole lot more money. And so there is a lot of concern about this because it's the same drug that people remember as being really cheap, and now it's not really cheap anymore. And there are other examples of that as well. I think that's one of the things that Senator Sanders is looking at as part of his investigation. But I do know that sort of these older drugs that are seeing big price spikes is quite a concern.
Mm-hmm. And thank you. We have time for one more quick call. Lynn, hi.
Hi. I'm a retired architectural specifier, and the only way we ever learn about new products is when product representatives or manufacturers' representatives come into our office, buy us lunch, and present their product. I don't see anything wrong with that kind of an approach at all.
Charles.
Right, and then that's the argument that I think you hear from a lot of pharmaceutical companies and the doctors that, you know, have relationships with pharmaceutical companies. They don't believe it influences their prescribing, and they think it's a vital part of the education and learning process about new medications.
And thank you very much, Lynn, for your call. Well, Charles, you're a wealth of information. Thank you so much. We have
been fun.
Yeah, it has been. Please come again, and we'll talk more about healthcare in America.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks. Charles Ornstein, our guest, senior reporter for ProPublica, covering healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry. Go to our Facebook page. There's a link to their site where you may want to look up your doctor and see the relationship between the pharmaceutical industry and your doctor. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the show, and thanks to KP Whaley, and thanks to you for making your phone calls and for listening. News is coming up momentarily from National Public Radio. We'll return with the second hour and speak with Professor Andrew Cooper about diplomatic afterlives. People like Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, Nelson Mandela, Tony Blair, and others.